Welcome, everyone. Hello, it's Irene, and we are here for our first live training call. I'll date this. It is the 18th of March, I believe. It's the year 2025, and we're in SPSM. This is round 17. Before we get into the handout, which I have mine here. So, again, if you don't know what this is, you probably saw it though, because you got into this call. But with every training call, there is a handout. So I'll just explain that for a second. They are kind of old school fill in the blank, where you take your pen, your pencil, and you write in answers as I go along. You do not need to do that though. There's also a handout with all of the answers. So you can double dip. You can do what you wish to do for that. And the reason I like to get the pen to paper, not only does it stay keeps us focused on the paper, we're connected with our hands in writing. You know, that's how most of us learned when we were young, was through writing and that kind of thing. So I know in the world of typing, we're typing a lot on computers and docs, but I still like good old pen and paper. I hope many of you do as well. So we'll go through this. Because this is the first training call, just know that these training calls run about 75 minutes to an hour and a half, depending on just the flow and all that kind of stuff. And if for some reason, as we're going through the theory, if you feel the need that that's enough, like your body is saying that's enough for today, really listen to that. Can I get everybody to make that promise? So, and the reason why is, as some of you have learned, even the theory can spark up something. A memory, an emotion, an activation. We might start to feel ourselves getting sleepy, which could be a sign that we're kind of going into a little bit of that energy of shutting down a little bit or freezing. And so this is my speech to all of you here live and on the recording. And on the recording, that a big part of this curriculum is obviously the curriculum, the lessons, the theory, showing up, doing the work, but it's also feeling and noticing how you engage with learning. I'm not sure if anyone else has started to notice this. Some of the alum, you will have had better practice at this. How we engage with new stuff is often representative of how we learned in the past. So if we had learning environments that were highly stressful, lots of, pressure on us. We were the high achiever. We had to get, perfect grades or else we didn't have good connection with our family members. Like if that's still in you, that's cool. Just know that when we're working with this material, it's so important to find your own pace. And this will be one of the toughest things. I'm just being really honest, fully transparent. We will have alumni who will say, the first time I went through SPSM, I was the good student because I wanted to make sure I got through everything and could prove that I could do it. And then they might say, I shouldn't have done that because I pushed too far and I did too much and I actually didn't grow my capacity. It actually shrunk a little bit, it brought more stress. And then what they'll do is they'll go through another time and they'll take their time. They really will take their time. So for those new, do the latter first. Take your time. Learn from the trials and tribulations of our alum. Just really take your time. And I know that there can be this feeling like if I don't do more, I won't get better faster. Does anybody know that? You gotta try to wipe that out. Even like a little corner, wipe a bit of that out so that you really do what maybe you wanted when you were young or an infant, which was having time, being given all the time you need to sense and feel and explore and play and learn, because we have to learn also when we're young, right? We have to learn. But when that learning is under pressure, more survival stress, higher brain doesn't pick it up. Okay, so this will be revolutionary for some of you, and it might cause a little bit of a tug of war with your past history of I need to get this done really well, because if I don't, I'm not going to be worth anything. And we want to try to wipe that out, right? Wipe that out. So, again, just a note for the chat for those live here. I really am trying to not look at it. I know I can just shut it down, but sometimes if I have a prompt for all of you, I want to still see it. So again, remember we're 233. We've got about 233 energies and souls, nervous systems in the room. So I want all of you to be able to really focus on the learning and what you're noticing in your body as we go through it, so that you don't miss anything and you miss the cues to either stay engaged or to maybe pause or maybe leave, right? So really listen to that. Before we get going, I'm just going to remind everybody to keep this an embodied experience. So just a little quick touch into your system. So as I was talking and explaining some of these quote unquote suggestions or rules, however you might want to call them, were you still connected to your system? Can you feel your pelvis, your we might call the butt on the chair, your bottom, feet on the floor? Are you comfortable? So some of you might be at a desk, some of you might be at your kitchen table, some of you might be in a car. Maybe you're listening to this as you drive. Maybe you're lying down. Maybe you're in bed. So wherever you are, whatever position you're in, just tune into that contact, real simple, that you're making with the surface you're on. And just see as you do that what you notice in your breathing. Does anything change? Does anything come to your attention? Can you just hang out with that contact with the ground or the object you're on, and just notice that along with what your breath might be doing. Where are your eyes looking? It's possible they're looking at the screen. Possible they're looking away from the screen. Maybe you're just listening to the audio recording after, and so there is no screen. So allow the attention of your vision to go wherever it wants to go. Or is there a desire to close your eyes? We're all at different time zones. Some of us, it's earlier in the morning, it's later in the night. Is there a bit of fatigue? If your eyes been glued to a screen working today, doing things. So give your system the opportunity to just let your eyes do what they want to do. And then know that while we go through the theory and the training call, you can shift your eyes, you can close them. You can turn away from the screen. If I ever need to show you something, I will always say, have a look at what I'm doing so you won't miss anything. How's your temperature? Are you warm enough? Or are you cool? Does something need cooling off? Does something need warming up? Basic biological awareness of your body temperature. So, as we go through today, I will every now and again pause and remind everyone of these connection points. I like to call them the basics, the nervous system health basics, just to kind of keep coming back to the body, to the awareness. So that we're not just in the head thinking, thinking. Thinking's good. We need to think. We need to compute and be in our higher brain. But we also need to start at this early stage connecting the thinking with how we feel everything internally. So, handout number one. Okay. So, the title for today is Coherence flow and containment capacity. I'll go through what these things mean as we move through. Now, there is an analogy, a metaphor that I've been using for years. It's coming up to 10 years now. And I call it the swimming pool beach ball analogy. Has anybody seen this? Do you know this? I know some of you will have seen this because you're alum. The original videos for all the newbies are on the site, the SPSM site under additional resources. But I'm going to review this because, believe it or not, even the practitioners or practitioners in training that I'm working with, I say swimming pool and beach ball to them at least once a day when we're in teaching and training, because it has to do with the survival stress, the old memories that aren't serving us anymore that are inside, and it also depicts the container, our capacity. So the swimming pool, we'll start with the handout, page one, first little bullet there. So get out your pens and pencils. So the swimming pool is your body. Now there's a lot of words, so I'll name them out and I'll repeat them. Your body, your brain, your nervous systems, we have many, the organs, the tissues, the skin, the muscle, the fat, the bone, the tendons, our sensations, our emotions, memories. So final kind of line is everything inside your body, everything that is your body. It's your container. Just like a swimming pool contains water and we swim in it. So, of course, you've got that image there of this fictitious swimming pool that is a rectangle. Now, next line down, the balls inside, next line down, are your stress. We could say stress, stressors, the stressful things in our lives. And past traumas slash adverse events, shock traumas, early traumas. So again, there's no one thing there. It's kind of all the things that happen to us that aren't the best that we store inside because for whatever reason, we just couldn't move them out. So, if we look at even the picture, I've got purposely different sizes of balls. Some of our balls are little tiny pebbles, others are massive bloody boulders, right, that have been stuck there for so long. Some of those balls aren't even from our lifetime, they're from our history, our lineage, our ancestry. This is where transgenerational trauma comes in, for example, right? So, we can carry on the traumas of our ancestors of the past. And that causes a lot of weight in our system, right? We just don't want to keep all this stuff inside. This comes back to flow, right? If you look at that pool, if there's so many balls packed in, there's very little flow. We can't get anything in there. Can't get any good stuff in there either. Next one, line C. This work. So I'm going to connect this, of course, to smart body, smart mind, because you're like, what the heck? Why am I having this person talk to me about swimming pools and beach balls, right? This is supposed to be serious nervous system work, but this is serious. So it's all about getting more space in that container in your body. So more space, line down, and release and flow. So it's all about more space and release and flow. It's as simple as that. Simple. Simple. Takes some time to get to that, but that's what it really is. Final line. Flow is a simple word for coherence. And if you aren't sure how to spell coherence, it's at the top of that handout on the title. So coherence. It's making sure things are listening to each other too. This ability for the organ systems to connect with each other, right? we use a real simple example of, say, digestion, right? When something goes in your mouth, whether it's liquid or food, you want it to go in one direction. Unless, of course, you have something that's poisonous. If you've ever had food poisoning, you know how terrible that is. You kind of start to know when something's off, you get hot, right? You start to feel grumbles in your belly, maybe pain, and the body will work to get it out or get it out down or up quickly, right? So the flow increases and it gets a little wonky. But on a good day, which hopefully most of our days we're not having food poisoning or something like that, it's going in one direction. But if we think about, say, classic troubles with the autonomic nervous system, does anybody here have digestive issues? We might call them, you know, IBS or chronic constipation or diarrhea, the whole host of things that happen in our gut, you know that that flow gets a bit sticky or it's too fast or it's too slow. And so we want to, again, increase this regulation in our nervous system through building up capacity and taking out these stressors and old things so there's more space in the system to flow in the right direction. There's no stopping blocks. I am oversimplifying this, but when you get into the deeper biology of stress videos where you learn about the vagus nerve and the different branches of the parasympathetic, this will start to add more information in terms of how early trauma affects this, or shock trauma, or not having good secure attachment, all these sorts of things, how that affects the digestion as one example. So page two. Page two. So this is where you're going to have to do some artwork. I'm kind of kidding, but know that this is really simple. And if anything, watch just how you may or may not just stay with the ease of what I'm about to instruct you to do. Okay. So you're going to see a bit of space there and you're going to see the words flow and coherence explain, and then draw four circles that aren't touching each other. So with your pen, just draw a circle, a circle, a circle, a circle, four circles, big enough so that you could write the letter or the number 8 inside. So four circles across the page. They don't have to line up, but they can. So you've got your four circles. And then in each circle, draw an 8 or the infinity symbol. You know that sign? It's like sometimes a sideways 8. Doesn't matter what direction it is, doesn't matter at all. So you've got four circles, and then in each circle, there's the little flow of 8. And then between the first and the second circle, connect the two with an 8. So again, just draw a little sideways 8, little infinity symbol, just to connect the dots. And then with circle 3, and 2, or the two middle ones, connect those ones. Colors are optional, doesn't matter. And then connect the final one, the fourth and the third. So now they're strung together, right? Kind of like a chain link fence. Make sure you're breathing. It's a very important drawing. A joke. And then connect the final circle, you might call it the fourth one, and the first one with another line. It could be a circle, it could be a line, it could be a squiggly line. Doesn't matter. Be creative. Be loops. Connect that below and then collect it above. So there's sort of this grand circle that doesn't have to be circular. It's just connecting it with lines. So this artwork piece that you just drew is my way of showing, convincing, teaching that everything is connected. So if we think of our body, we can think of those four circles as the head, the skull, the spine, the pelvis. the legs. We could think of it as the brain, which is inside the skull, the brain stem that connects the brain to the spinal cord, the spinal cord, and then the next circle could be all the nerves coming out. It could be one organ system. I mentioned the digestion. It could be the mouth, the food tube, which is known as the esophagus, the stomach, the small intestine, the large intestine, and so on. As cliche as it is, everything is connected in our body. One thing that happens in one area is going to happen in another. If you've ever flown in a plane and you have a bottle of water, a plastic bottle, what happens to that bottle? It gets pressurized, right? And then when you land, you open it and it has pressure that releases. We also know that when we fly, we sometimes feel a little funny afterwards. Why? It's because we are also being pressurized, all of our cells. So while we might see our, liquids explode and our pens explode, of course, we're not exploding on the plane, thank goodness, but we are having pressure on our system, on our vascular system, on our organs. This is why sometimes people come off of a plane and they feel really bloated. They might get a lot of gas. Right? Because everything's just been. So, this idea of flow, i.e., coherence, is what we want. It's our goal. So, the next line down under your drawing there, having good flow means good coherence. Good coherence. And we want flow, just the little italic below, within each circle. Right? So within the organ system or within the cells, but also between each other. If we want to go even meta, we could say that one of those circles is us and the other circle is our partner or our spouse or our children or our pets or our plants or our garden. We want to have good flow. Believe it or not, there will be many alumni that can attest that as they get more flow in their body, i.e., more health, more coherence, more regulation, they take care of their plants better. Their plants stop dying because they're in attunement and connection to them. So I like to see the bigger picture in things because we don't just always want to focus on us. We want to see how we and our health impacts the world around us and others around us. So we can take this to mean as little and as microscopic as we want to as big as we want. And we know that we want to have good flow. So, onwards to containment. So, the next one is what is containment? So, if we just think of that pool, a good contained pool means that the structure is solid. Maybe there's a pool liner, we don't want any cracks in it. Right? There is going to be a containment within that. And even if that pool has a filtration system, which some do, depending on what they do, you still want the water to stay inside because if it's leaking in any way, if things are getting out, eventually there'll be no water left. Right? And we'll have to keep filling it up and filling it up. So, containment, next line down. Containment is staying embodied. That's the first word there on that bigger sentence. And connected to the environment, that's the next word, our environment. And your internal state, that's the next two words. While experiencing bodily experiences, sensations, feelings, images, our thinking, thoughts, actions, behaviors, no matter how intense or activating. So this is again one of the names of the game is one might go into this work and know, oh, when that happens, I just lose it. My pool becomes a puddle, or my pool freezes over, or my pool burns up, all the water is just gone, right? If we think of this pool analogy, having good containment in our system is being able to experience the difficult things, the hard things, and the good things, and being able to stay connected to body, environment, and both at the same time. That's again our aim. I think what has occurred over, say, the last 20 years with the push of the mind-body world, which many of you know, and the mindfulness world, and even the fitness world in the 80s, which got really big, is we've compartmentalized things. So I'm going to go and I'm going to work on my fitness and my movement, and then I'm going to work on my mental health, and then I'm going to work on my other stuff. But we don't connect the dots. And so a big hallmark, we could say, fundamental element of, say, Peter Levine's work, who I've worked with and mentored under, the founder of Somatic Experiencing, is this connection to the environment, right? Everybody was all big on the mind body, and that's important, definitely. Mind body connection, totally important. How we connect to whatever the mind is, we actually still don't know where it lives anymore at this point. It's somewhere. Maybe it's in the brain, maybe it's out there, right? But we know it exists. Mind body important, but now mind body environment. And then, of course, we go deeper in SBSM. The body is more than just the physical movement, it's more than just the breath. It's about noticing your survival chemistry and being able to notice it so you can work with it directly. And that's what we're starting to work with. So, again, containment is staying embodied. I'll read this again. And connected to our environment and your internal state while experiencing bodily experience, no matter how intense or activating. When you can experience something really big and scary and just stay present, feel it, move through it, integrate it, that is when you know you have a very strong swimming pool, right? That's when you know you have what's called this window of tolerance that's bigger. And that's when you know you have a lot of regulation because you can handle these things. All right, next little section here. I'm going to name out some words, and these words we will go through in detail on page 3. So, to increase this flow and space, containment and capacity, and have more chance for release. So, what I'll say there in the world of one could say somatic trauma healing, which when I started this work 10 years ago, nobody really knew what that meant. And now everybody's talking about somatic release, somatic trauma release, and it's kind of lost its meaning and understanding because everybody's thinking, I have to get the releases out. I have to shake out. I have to move my body to emit these stored balls. And while that's true, what we have found, what I have seen, is that when we increase our swimming pool, when we increase our capacity, those balls start to naturally float out on their own. It's almost like magic. They just come out because the system does not want them. Your system doesn't want them. But when you have a lot of survival stress and the pool is tiny, you've got all these balls inside, the system is in a little bit of a conundrum. One might say it's in a bit of a pickle. It's like, I can't, think about this. If you've got a swimming pool and it's tiny and you've got all these balls inside, you can even hear the sound trying to get those balls out. It's going to be tough because they're so jammed in. So, this idea of opening up our flow, increasing space, that allows a lot of our stored survival energies to start to come out. Now, it doesn't always feel good. However, when we have more capacity, we just have more capacity. Can't say it any more simpler than that. We actually can be like, I can handle this intense heat or this tremor in my leg, or that I can remember that scary thing without shutting down or going into more activation. So these are some of the things that we will work with. These are not all the things. But these are some of the things that we will get into within the first 4 to 5 labs of SBSM. So the first one is orienting. Orienting. Again, I'm not going to describe them now. We'll get into that on page 3. Number 2, awareness. Number 3, self-awareness. Number four, follow your impulse. Follow your impulse. So there's three words there. Number five, joints slash, so joints of the body, diaphragms. Diaphragms. If you're not sure how to spell diaphragms, you can look at peek at page three and it's spelled there. Six, kidney, adrenal interface. I like to often abbreviate that KA for short. Kidney adrenal. So page three, let's break these down a little bit. So orienting, I guided you into that at the beginning of our call. Yeah, just really gently. I did it in a much more soft way. I didn't say, I need you to look here, right? Because even that can create a stress response. I said something along the lines of, where are your eyes looking right now? Maybe they're looking at the screen. Maybe they're looking away. So, what does orienting offer us? It offers us a connection to out there. Now, orienting isn't just eyes, because there's some folks who clearly, let's say, can't see. They still can orient. What are some of the ways in which people orient if they have no vision? Sound, smell, vibration, temperature, taste. We do these things automatically without thinking about it. You know, when you open up the fridge, obviously you might look for food, but then you have to like, oh, is that still good? And then you smell, right? All these things, the color of something, you know when something's gone off because the color is slightly off. But our smell is incredibly important too to orient to safety. It also orients us to pleasure. Ooh, look at those colorful flowers. Those are so beautiful, right? So, orienting sparks up, back to the handout, sparks up the social engagement nervous system, which is the ventral vagal portion. So, those are the three words, ventral vagal portion of the parasympathetic nervous system. Okay. This is what we'll get into deeper when we get into the vagus nerve. These portions go to the ears, the throat, but also the heart, everything above the lungs. Now, orienting is an interesting one because if we were under some kind of duress or stress or trauma and our orienting response got stuck, orienting can be a little not as fun. It might not be as smooth as it should be. So, the most classic, simple example I might say is if you're walking on a field outside, maybe it's a football field, a soccer field, and maybe you're not even playing, you're just out for a walk and a ball comes screaming at you from the air. You might see it and then you orient. And you might, you know, depending on your skill, you might say, ah, get that away from me. Or maybe you catch it, right? Or maybe you headbutt it if you know how to play that kind of game with your head. If you orient and see it and then protect yourself or play the game, there's going to be very little, if any, stress response held in the body. So nothing, no balls are going to come into your pool, right? Now, let's say you're walking down the path by a soccer pitch, and you don't see it coming, and it bonks you in the head. There'll be probably a startle, right? Because you didn't orient to that threat that was coming at you. So, this lack of orienting to protect yourself can create a stress response. It can create, it's not so much we would call this a big trauma, but there is an inability to defend something that was from the outside of you. And so that startle can actually create tension and stress. So you're adding kind of balls to that pool. Now, this is a very simple example, but let's say a person goes home after that and like, oh, why is my neck so sore? Right? It's like, oh, it's because there was a threat that you didn't have a chance to orient to and defend yourself. And of course, you could extrapolate that example to us if we are in a situation of being attacked, car accidents, you don't see something, you slip, you fall. Again, this is why our awareness and seeing the world around us is so important. Has anybody ever stepped out of their home and they didn't realize how cold it was overnight? And you feel ice or frost, and you kind of go, uh-oh, this happened to me last night. I didn't realize it had gotten so cold. And I went outside to see the stars. And the moment I put my foot on the deck, I felt the crunchiness of the frost. And that alerted my head, oh, don't just walk, careful, with carefreeness to the grass. Be very careful. And so that is our orienting responses also help us. They save us. They keep us safe. Now, if we're not in connection with the environment, if we're not feeling, we're going to miss that. Something's crisper in the air. Something feels different under my feet. And working with people for years and years, often these falls, if we use that as an example, they happen because we're not paying attention. I got to get to that thing. I got to get to that thing. Or I'm listening to something or I'm talking to someone. You can still talk to someone and sense the crunchiness under your feet. Yeah. So this comes back to how are we refining ourselves as humans to be just more physically fit to relate to the world. It's not just about fitness, but it's about safety. Because, yeah, it sucks if you fall and then you have to treat an injury because you weren't paying attention to the frost on the ground. Right? We don't want that. So that is my speech to all of you. This is one way to prevent more stressors, more balls from popping into our swimming pool that we really can avoid. What you might find, and I have found this with myself, and some of our alum might attest to this. I know I knock on wood, don't really get into any trouble with getting into accidents. I don't fall the way I used to in my 20s. I don't get into sticky situations physically. Because there's just more of a body awareness. More doesn't mean you're always slow, but you're quicker at responding to what's under you, what's around you. Same with driving, right? You see the things that don't seem right and then you self-correct. So, orienting, it's all about orienting that piece. We want to have the ability to explore and see the world around us, but we also want to have defensive orienting so that we stay safe. If anybody drives a car, what do they call it? Defensive driving. You want to have your defenses on because it's dangerous. You don't know what's going to come from sides, right? All right, next one. This one's kind of the next few are quite simple. Two, awareness. So that's with the world and your environment. It kind of is coupled with orienting in some ways. Orienting, though, is a real nervous system strategy, right? If you have that ball coming at your head and you see it, you're going to act, right? And it's a part of your nervous system saying alert, alert. But you can be sitting on a park bench and have awareness of watching a soccer game and not need to be in defensive orienting. You can just be aware of the area around you. Three, self-awareness. So that is with yourself. First word there, with yourself and your insides, kind of the same thing. Also known as your interoception. You've never said the word interoception. Try it out. It's a fun word to say. Say it out loud with me. Seriously, interoception. Right? The internal perception of your environment. This is so pivotal for us gaining capacity and releasing these balls in our swimming pool. When we don't have internal vision inside, we might not realize that something's not right with that food that I'm smelling this. Something's not right. Right? Inside, something will say, don't eat that. Right? This ability to sense, I'm tired. I need to just have a pause. How many of us have lived a life where we just overrode that tired signal saying, stop, take a break, getting sick? I'm sure all of us here have gotten sick at some point. You know, that first little bit where you're like, I feel something niggling in my throat, or I feel a little extra hot. That sense of a fever, that's important information. It actually can make or break whether or not we fully get sick. Because then it's like, I need to rest. I need some more fluids. I haven't had enough vitamins, minerals this week, whatever it might be. Or maybe oh gosh, I've got this tension in my throat. Huh, I think there's tears I'm holding back. But if we don't have that nuance with our internal environment, we will miss emotions, the needs to take care of ourselves, all these things. So the self-awareness is very important. Now, four, follow your impulse. Listening to your body's organic needs. That's the word, organic needs. This ties in really well with what I was just talking about with interoception. Now, in this response respects, it's your biological needs, the need for water, food, maybe no food, right? I know for many of us, we have a tendency to not know when we should stop eating, or we forget to eat. I was never that person, but some people will forget to eat, right? It's like, what's going on there? You're not noticing that your blood sugar has crashed, that you need some sustenance, some protein, some fat, whatever it is. When we're young, when we're infants, we need our needs to be met. So this is where I tie this back to early trauma. Babies know exactly what they need when they're full term, yeah, and they're healthy. They know. And they'll cry, they'll make sounds to get attention, not because they're trying to be difficult, but they need their needs met. There is a physiological distress in their body that needs to be soothed. And typically it's food, it's fear, it's temperature. In our world, we put our babies in diapers, so there's a soiled nature, there's a discomfort, something doesn't feel good, right? So part of our work as adults is returning back to those basic needs and really starting to listen to them. And honestly, just doing that can make everything shift. Because what happens from what I've seen is as we start to offer what our body needs in the moment, and you know, you don't need to do it in a stress response way. It's like, oh, I'm getting a little hungry. I should probably consider stopping my work or pulling over and getting a snack or something. Like, it doesn't have to be this abrupt stop everything and go, you know, but you start to sense these things. Obviously, same with going to the bathroom. In the wild, animals, they don't need to worry about it. They just go. With humans, you know, we still got to make it to the toilet for the most part, or if we're lucky enough to live outside in the woods, we can go out and have a pee in the bush or whatever it is like that, right? But we have to be a little more discerning about that. But because we don't have that access to the natural world, who here has held in their bladder for hours knowing that they have to? You know, it's the same with planes, you know. I'll just keep holding it and holding it, but what does that do? It, you know, your blood needs to move on a plane, right? It doesn't want to just stay still. So this following of your impulse is actually a clever way to teach yourself maybe what you didn't get when you were a little one, right? And so this is also why it can feel like such a tug of war. Because we never had that ba those basic needs met when we were really, really, really young. Next one, joints and diaphragms. So this will start to pop in during lab three. and lab five. And everybody just brings their wrists up, right? Everybody knows that these are our hands and our fingers, and you've got your wrist that's kind of where the hand connects to the lower arm. Anywhere where a bone comes together, shoulder bone, hip bone, well, it's not a hip bone, it's the femur going into the pelvis, which makes the hip joint. Joints are where bones come together. And interestingly enough, these little containers and spaces, they can hold emotion. They can hold memory. They hold experience. And it doesn't have to be just because you've had an accident or a break to that wrist or that arm or that shoulder. Of course, that is also true. I'll explain it more in a second. Diaphragms, often we think of the diaphragm, we think of that, what's called the respiratory diaphragm. If you know your anatomy a little bit, when you take a breath in, the diaphragm pushes down, it goes down to make room for the lungs to get bigger. That's kind of what people often call their true diaphragm. But in, or and, in osteopathic traditions, if you've heard of osteopathy, but also in craniosacral and chiropractics, there are these diaphragms, these spaces in the body that also hold memory, emotion, tension, energy, trauma. And they kind of follow, if some of you know the chakras from a more Eastern perspective, but they also share anatomy in terms of glands. You've got your root chakra or the pelvic diaphragm. You've got your solar plexus, kind of the belly area, which would be the sorry, the true respiratory diaphragm. You've got the sacral diaphragm below. You've got the heart area. So there's all these bands of areas in space, the throat here at the bridge of the eyes, and then the very top of the head. If you look at this area, you've also got glands. You've got your pineal gland, your thyroid gland, your thymus gland, your kidney adrenals are at that respiratory. And then, of course, in us females, we'll have the reproductive organs that are different than the males, the testes versus the ovaries, right? All these areas hold stuff. They're like containers. They're not real, like Tupperware containers, but they hold stuff. So if I go back to that example of, you get on a plane and you get pressurized, the whole system gets a pressurization. If we have, say, an accident to our spine, I'll just use that as an example. Say you, heaven forbid, break your back, the lower part, that area is going to get seized up. It might have lots of tension. The immune response is going to go into that. But everything above and below it is also going to be impacted because everything's also going to try to protect and hold that lower back in space so that it doesn't get more injury or so it becomes a bit more frozen so that it heals, so it gets immobilized while it's healing. So let's just say that broken back has improved and you're moving again. But then you realize, why am I keep getting these headaches? Right? Or why do I have ankle pain? This is just a hypothetical example. Chances are, somewhere within that trauma, that injury, all the focus was put, say, on the lower back region and the pelvis, but we didn't realize that our upper body and our lower body was kind of holding on, protecting. And so this comes back to this concept of flow, coherence, and the little circles you drew, right? So, this is a long way of saying joints and diaphragms. I'm going to read this out, this sentence here. These are little containers and spaces that need to be open. That's the first word. Open and resilient and in flow. Now, everyone is unique in their histories, the injuries they've had, the broken breaks, the ankle sprains. The head concussions. Has anybody here had a head trauma? That's a big doozy when you get hit on your head. I've had them more than I care to admit. And it can stop the flow in the whole system. And so we work in SPSM with these joints and with these diaphragms directly through your focused attention and in some cases touch, where you can reach them yourself and touch them. And so this is often what is missed in somatic trauma healing, if we just use that statement, because we can move our body all we want and do things to get movement. But if these internal containers are stuck and frozen or in shutdown, collapse because of the traumas that occurred to them, we're not painting the full picture. This is why some things like osteopathy, craniosacral, for example, can be beautiful complements to this work. Because sometimes you do need a little help. You need a little adjustment. You need a little something from the outside to help the flow going. Chinese medicine can also be beautiful for this. Acupuncture, Qigong, Tai Chi, right? And directing our energy. And this is where the Eastern practices of feeling, sensing the head, imagining, when people talk about bringing light into areas of these bodies. It's not just woo-woo. You are directing attention, energy, and qualities to that area to help bring more vibrancy and vitality to these levels of the system. I don't think it's any coincidence that Eastern tradition and Western tradition have similar areas that they work with, right? Whether it's the chakra energies, the osteopathic areas, or of course, in more modern medicine, it's making sure that our hormones are in good order and flow, because all these glands are where our hormones are released, right? The adrenal glands, that's where adrenaline comes out, cortisol, for example. Thyroid is high thyroid hormone. All right. So just go into the next one. Six, kidney adrenal interface. So I just mentioned the adrenals. These little guys are very important, but for some of us, they have been stressed out to the max through our life. So the primary organ system, so the line there, this primary organ system goes on alert. That is the word, alert, and reacts severely in a stressful situation. So we have that ball flying at our face, and we're like, ah, I don't know how to do this, right? I don't want to catch the ball. We're going to have some adrenalized action to figure out how to avoid it, for example. Or you see something that isn't that nice, it can trigger the adrenals to pump out chemicals to produce a fight flight response. So we work with the kidney adrenal interface, and this will be introduced to you in lab four, so that we stop the system from hurting and scaring itself. It's a very important statement. We're going to work with this kidney adrenal system to stop ourselves, to stop our physiology from hurting and scaring ourselves. This work comes from the studies I've done with Kathy Kane, who is a wonderful practitioner and teacher. She was at one point on the SE faculty for a very long time. She's also somatic experiencing trained. And she realized that for some of us who have had lots of early trauma, right? I'm sure there's many here, you're working with some early trauma stuff, or even we've had multiple shock traumas where the system has just been put through the ringer. And it just doesn't feel safe, right? She realized that for many of us, we have to work not just with releasing events and shaking things out. We have to help the system find safety internally again. And the way she started to play with that was working directly with the kidneys and adrenals, because the adrenal gland sits on top of the kidney. That's why it's called ad above renal, the renal gland. And so, believe it or not, just through intention and tuning into these little organs and giving them grace and giving them time and telling them, hey, maybe you don't have to freak out so much right now. What would it be like to just take a chill? to have a little siesta. I often use the example in my teaching, and you'll hear this. It's like you're having a nice warm salt bath, and they're just going to float and chill out and be warm and happy. And so that, believe it or not, can be monumental in stopping the cycle of your stress physiology taking over all day long. So we can try to think our way through this and say, I'm safe, things are safe. We can even orient till the cows come home. But if this underlying stress physiology is pumping out the message, we got to protect, we need to act, we need to fight, it's not going to get us all the way. And I know that there's many people that will say, I keep trying to do somatic experiencing sessions or some form of that, and I'm just still not getting better. It's not that the SE model is bad, it's that the system needs something else before that. Okay. And so that's why, again, in my work, because I've got training in all these methodologies, I bring it all together. So the next line, this is just a general description, an idea, but for some of us, it can take up to 2 years. And I'm being kind of minimal with that. For some, it could be longer. And don't be scared. I'm still in my own system finding little bits where my kidney adrenals pump up when I don't want them to. And it's like, oh, there they are again, right? That is indicative of a lot of in utero trauma stress, early trauma stress. It's okay. It's okay if it takes time. The key is that you know you're working on it. So it can take up to 2 years to recover and repair this circuitry, even after the stress, that's the next word, and stimulus is gone. Right? I am living in a very safe environment. I love my husband. I love my work. I've got my health. And yet, still, sometimes in the middle of the night, my little adrenals will go, "You're not safe, Irene. You're not safe, Irene." And then I go, "Man, there it is again. Okay. Feel them. It's okay." Right? And that just shows how energetically ingrained some of these patterns of survival are in us. And it's, again, it's okay. We're all dealing with this stuff. We're all working with this stuff. I'm going to make a guess. For most of us, our ancestors had it pretty tough, right? Things were tough back in the day. They're tough now, but they were different in a different way, tough back in the day. So just know, working with all these things that I just mentioned, orienting, following impulse, these layers of the body, joints, diaphragms, kidney adrenals. They will all layer in throughout the SPSM curriculum. And some of them, you're going to be like, I just need to hang out in this lesson for like a month. And that's where you ask questions of our moderators and say, oh, I feel like I really just need to follow my impulses for the next 3 weeks. Chances are, if you're sensing that, that's what you should do, right? When I was in private practice, there would be years where I would do the same kidney adrenal work with the same person every week, every day. And that's just how we need to keep laying down the message that we're okay, that we're safe. Page four. Let me have a little drink here. Take some time, you guys, to see where you are in your chair. See if you've shifted in a way that's crooked or needs a little shift or a little stand up. Maybe you need to leave your eyes a rest and look away from the screen. So just do what you need to do. Right, page number four. So back to the swimming pools, or the swimming pool and beach balls. So this is going to be, again, sort of review, but we'll just keep going because a lot of this you've heard, but bears repeating. So first line, the many balls packed into this pool represent the stressors, the toxicities. So it could be a trauma, it could be a shock, it could be a memory that keeps, you keep having nightmares about something. For example, I say toxicity specifically because it could be a toxin. It could be something that your body is holding from an old chemical, from an old medicine, surgeries, When we have surgeries and anesthesias, we can hold a lot of those chemicals in our cells until our system is ready to release them. So all these balls represent the stressors and toxicities stored within the body. One could say that this is nervous system dysregulation. So that's the word, dysregulation. When you have that much stuff packed in, there's not a lot of room for the system to do general repair, right? It's so focused on tending to all those things that are stored inside and keeping them in there that our general functions of repairing our cells, repairing our gut lining, enhancing our immune system, you know, tissue repair, all of it kind of takes a back seat. And that's where, again, when we think of the autonomic nervous system, it is responsible for two main things, survival and basic bodily functions. And if the survival piece is front and center with all these balls inside, the system isn't going to have time to go and, you know, if we use the pool example, the filtration is going to be sluggish because there's all this extra stuff inside that's not supposed to be there. That's a very simple way of saying we need to have rest, digest, and repair so that we stay healthy and well. But if we have fight and flight and freeze and shutdown, these balls going on all the time, we're not going to be able to repair. The toxicity thing is interesting because if we do have a toxin in our system that is foreign, hence toxin, the system is going to be trying to get rid of it. But if it can't, it's going to be in this override of something isn't right, something isn't right. So next line or the next sort of section here. So many balls means old survival stress. First line, old survival stress. So this would be AKA trapped trauma. That car accident, that abuse, that time you were shouted at and you never got to scream back or say stop. Medical stuff. It could be medical trauma, dental trauma. Even things that are life-saving can be traumatic because our bodies have to be put through the ringer, right? That kind of thing. Two, chronic daily stress. Now, this kind of goes without saying, but it also comes back to, are we aware? Are we aware that our system is in a stress state? I think for many people in the world, they might not realize that they live in a constant state of chronic stress. Their baseline is so far off regulation that they just say, well, aren't we all supposed to, doesn't everybody have chronic body pain? Doesn't everybody have chronic digestive troubles? This is often a thought is like, well, this is just how it is. So part of this work is starting to feel, this is that stress response that pushes me chronically every day. I need to back it off, for example, right? And that's where that interoception comes in. One will start to feel the rise of tension more when there's less tension, right? When you have less tension in your system, you will notice when it comes up more. But if your body is just always tense, there's like no differentiating factor. It's like, oh, this is just how it is. So chronic daily stress is an important one to consider. What one will find as they get deeper into this work is their old ways, what they think they can get done in a day, isn't possible. And this does not mean that you're failing. It means that you're getting more regulated because for the most part, our baseline, at least in the West, is to do way too much. Way too much. Three. So again, these many, but this is representing all these balls inside biological impulses that are not followed. So anytime you hold back those tears, anytime you feel a desire to put up a boundary and you stop yourself. Now, of course, there's times I put this little caveat where if you put up a boundary or you show that emotion, it actually might bring you more danger, more unsafety. That's where you have to make a judgment call. And when we start this work, we can feel kind of like invigorated, like, I'm going to tell everyone in my family to just go F off, right? Because that's what I never got to say when I was 13, when I should have said it, right? That's why teenagers can be so tricky, right? They're asserting their boundaries and autonomy. But for many of us, we couldn't do that because we knew if we did, we'd get into trouble, like real trouble. And so as adults, we have to be somewhat discerning because we also don't want to rock so many boats that everything around us just collapses. So one hint I will give everyone, if you know that there was harm done to you, things were not attuned, you were not attuned to when you were young, and your parents are still alive, give them a little space. Because if they're not doing this work for themselves, you will add petrol to the flame. And that's where you have to go back to you. It is for you. If you're an adult, forget about them. Let them do their life, right? Let them do their life. Let them live how they need to live. If you need to support them in any way that is, able and you can do that, but try to disconnect your trauma healing from what they need to do. Now, this doesn't mean that if a parent or a relative or a sibling gets interested and says, hey, I notice that you something's different in you. If they have that awareness to notice that, that's when you have the open, curiosity-driven conversation to say, yeah, I'm actually doing this stuff where I'm like learning about my nervous system and blah, blah, blah. And they might go, oh, cool, tell me more. They might go, oh, I see. And then they stop asking questions. Don't keep telling them what you're doing. So that's some survival skill there in terms of relations, right? It's very difficult for folks who aren't interested in doing this healing to hear all the bad things they did to you. I hope that makes sense. So again, you got to pick your battles. I think for anyone living with a spouse, a partner, a husband, a wife, that is different. If you want to have harmony and flow with your significant other and you're really doing this work and they're not interested at all, you got to consider, is this going to work? Because if you're living in an environment with someone and they're constantly in their own survival pattern and not working on themselves in some way, little way, even if it's with, say, a therapist, right? Or maybe they go to a group or something like that, great. But many of my clients, when I was in private practice, the ones that didn't get better didn't improve their primary relationship that they lived with. It was impossible. I'm being really honest. Because if that other person that you're living with, if you feel in any way threat, and it doesn't have to be abuse, by the way, it could be they kind of ridicule you when you decide to do some art, or you're doing some fun exercise or movement and you feel self-conscious because they don't understand it. You need to be comfortable expressing yourself, doing the things that your body authentically wants to do. So I'm just putting that out there because this can definitely challenge what we will accept every day in our general environment. Very different than, yeah, I got to go visit my sister-in-law. I just can't stand her, but I'm going to do it because that's what I'm supposed to do, but we're not going to do all the things that she wants. I'm going to have a boundary, but I'm not going to also throw her out the window, for example. So it depends again on the situation, the context. So that is all in service of biological impulses that are not followed. When we don't follow those, they can trap stress, trap more stuff inside. The other thing I'll say to that, let's just say that you know you're about to go do something with people that you don't love or like, but you kind of have to. Great, fine. Stay aware. Keep your orienting. Keep connecting to your body. And then when you leave, that's when you might have to do some extra self-care to get the wiggles out, to get the energy out, right? To have a scream, to do something, to get that energy out so you don't hold that tension. Next one down. Not letting emotions out. This kind of connects with biological impulses that are not followed. But as we know, emotion that is held can create a lot of pain and a lot of body tension. It can also throw off our internal systems because, again, emotions, as you'll learn as we go deeper into the labs and lessons, they arise from the body. They arise from sensation. We interpret them in the brain, but they are visceral. Our emotions come from our viscera, from our organs, from our tissues. And so when we're not working and letting our emotions out, we're stopping the flow in our body. Sensations that are not felt. So again, you see these are looping back to our drawing of the circle. It all loops together. If you feel butterflies in your stomach and you're like, ah, I got to stop feeling them. I can't be nervous, right? That is also going to create pressure in the system, right? Acknowledge, say, in this case, the nerves, the butterflies, and be like, what do I need to feel these and be with them? All right. It's in real small print in italics there under that. It says this can be deliberate or unconscious. So here's the other clincher is sometimes we're holding back sensation or emotion and we don't know we're doing it because we're so used to doing it. We're so used to shutting this stuff down. As we get more capacity, as our swimming pool builds, we will start to notice these things more. But for some of us, if we've been really good at freezing, functional freeze, as I would call it, we might not know that we're holding back tears. We might not know that we're holding back sensing a part of our body when we go to do something or talk to someone. Next one down. So that image changed. Now we have a little exit. So now I'm breaking the absolute metaphor because now the pool water technically is spilling out because we've opened up the pool. But the goal is to release those balls. We got to get those balls out of our system, right? So while it isn't just about shaking all the trauma out, it also is about getting those trauma responses out. But often we have to start again with creating more space in the system. So page five. So we want to create more exit paths to release those balls. So now you've got the picture. There's two exit paths. There's a blue and a pink going out on the top, and there's a blue and a pink going out on the bottom. Those exit paths are what you will be learning and continue to learn. That would be orienting, following your impulse. We get to working with the diaphragms, the kidney adrenals, the gut, the brainstem, the layers of the body. All of these elements are connected to connecting with yourself and also connecting with the environment. That is what creates the exit paths. There's no specific technique of do this, then do this, then do this. You're learning, I like to say, the ABCs and 1, 2, 3s, sort of the alphabet of these exit paths by working with the neurosensory lessons, the exercises. So, for some people, did anybody find when they started to do the orienting lesson last week, there was a little bit of a shift in your system? There was a bit of a settling, maybe. Maybe there was a little bit of a yawn. Maybe the belly released. Right. For some people, orienting will bring that to them immediately. For some, it's going to be more, we could say, nurturing to just follow impulse. Everyone's going to be a little different. For some, when we get into more of the touch work with your diaphragms, that connection with self can, again, everyone's different, but the goal is to open up those spaces in the diaphragms so that they have room to let that emotion out or let the memory out or let the movement out. So that's how we create these exit paths. Next one, D, we also want to create more space in general. So we're kind of going back and forth between how can we have exit paths so that we're not holding stress in, and how can we create more space. And oddly, this is where it's a little bit of a funny one to think about. They're both happening at the same time. So, what creates exit paths also creates more space. The lessons are all in service of growing general regulation, growing capacity. My classic example, which some of you will have heard, so apologies for this repeat, but let's just say you're walking through your home and your awareness doesn't pick up on the fact that your partner just vacuumed the living room and they moved some furniture. They moved the coffee table, you know, 3 inches away from where it usually is. And you don't know that. And you walk through the living room like you normally do and you hit it with your foot and you go, ah, damn it. Like, why did that move? Right. So you get maybe a bit pissed at the table, maybe get pissed at them because they've moved it. But then you feel this sensation. You feel this pain in your toe. In that moment, that is your cue, now that you know this work, to stop. Maybe you just stand, or maybe you sit down and you feel the sensation. Are there any words that have to come out? Does it make you feel like, I'm going to cry? Why am I crying? I just only stubbed my toe on the coffee table. If one has lived a whole life ignoring little sensations like this, when you hurt yourself, when you fall, these sorts of things, the moment you do this with awareness, think of that pool, all of a sudden it's like a bunch of balls are going to come out with that moment. So it's like, okay, this isn't a big deal. I've only just stubbed my toe. No one's dying. But why am I breaking down in a mess of tears and sobbing? It could be, and chances are, that is a reminder of all the times in the past when you did something like that or something else that was stressful and you just ignored it. You shut everything down and you kept going. Right? And so no matter how small something is, whether it's that or you bang your elbow on the side of the door or you have a little scare when you're driving, again, granted, it's safe to do so. Pause, feel, sense the energies, the sensations, the emotions. That is how we create more space, by not letting new balls go inside. That makes sense? That can take us a long way. So even if we just go through our lives and we just start noticing these interactions that we have with discomfort, and we be with them long enough for them to shift, we're not adding more balls to the pool. All right, where was I? So more space. So kind of halfway down that page, space, as you know, more capacity means capacity. So space means capacity in your system. Number one. So space means capacity to, number one, sense and be with the body sensations. Just like I said, with that stubbing your toe example, sense and be with your body sensations. Number two, experience and emote emotions. Lots of ease there. Experience and emote emotions. Which again connects with number one. In order to emote, we have to sense the sensations. They go hand in hand. Back to your drawing with the circles. Number three, notice what is happening on the inside. So yeah, you stub your toe. There's a sharp pain. You get a little pissed off. And then my gut is clenching. Why is my gut clenching? It doesn't have to clench. Or my hands are clenching. Right? So again, this ability to tune inside and notice what is happening. Number four, be with the stress outside of you while also feeling the internal experiences. This is a longer one. So again, having more capacity means to be with the stress outside of you while also feeling the internal experiences. So often when something stressful happens outside of us, we stop feeling ourselves. And then this is where we go into reactivity. This is where we get triggered, right? We don't notice that something on the outside is actually sparking up something internally. It might have nothing to do with you, right? And so this ability to go, yeah, that's happening on the outside. And ooh, I'm getting a little spicy, or I'm getting a little shut down. So now, of course, if this is like your child and they just had an accident, you're going to be a bit stressed out and you need to go into action mode. If I use that example, though, we know that a child will perceive an accident as worse if they see that the parent is stressed out. So if the parent is in a high state of stress with something that occurred to the kiddo, they might feel actually okay. And then they see mom or dad is like freaking out and overactivated. They'll be like, okay, this must be really bad. And then that adds more adrenaline to them. So that's for the parents, right? Very different than seeing something on the news that you just can't stand, that isn't part of your living room, that isn't living with you every night, right? So two very different things there. And this is where nuance and context is super important. Number five, again, this is in service of capacity. So capacity to having more space in your pool to think clearly, communicate, and socially engage. So having more capacity, which means there's less survival stress inside, allows us to think clearly, communicate, and socially engage. This comes back to what humans are built for. Our higher brains, our methods of communication are so advanced. Not to say that animals in the wild aren't advanced in their ways of communicating through song and, you know, way birds sing and that, but we do have a very sophisticated communication capacity. Our higher brain is in some ways maybe it's too smart for our own good, right? It's very strong. But when we are stuck in survival response, our ability to sense make and critically think and really be curious with what's around us, it gets dull. It can even shut off, right? And so again, part of this more capacity, more regulation means our higher brain is going to start functioning a lot better. You will find, and I see this for the most part, we get less triggered about stuff. We get less drawn into drama that isn't ours. So important right now. Right. So this ability to just be like, not mine, mine. Right. So the kid having a problem, that is mine. Got to worry about that. My general environment, worry about that. Best scenario. So E, final one. You take a look at the final page, at least on my handout. Page 6 has the pool with many exits, many exits. So even if you just look at that pool, way less balls than the first pool that you saw that had tons of balls in it. So final sentence on page 5 at the bottom, the best scenario is continual exits and lots of space. That's our goal. So while we can give you fancy words like improving regulation of the nervous system and getting better tone of the vagus nerve and da, da da da. At the end of the day, we keep it real simple. We need more space and we need more exits so that the stressors, the traumas don't stay stuck, right? We don't want these things velcroed to us inside. We want them to be able to release. Also, let's say we do have a traumatic event happen. These things will happen to us. We will get into accidents. Things will happen that we don't like, that aren't good for us. The difference is when we have more capacity and all these things that I've just mentioned, you know how to move them out with that skill of sensing, feeling. Eventually, we'll get into this concept of procedural memories. This is covered in the biology of stress video number 5, stored procedural memories. This is where the shaking comes out. This is where the running comes out. This is where I feel the need to hit or express something comes out. That is also part of this work. But the foundations, super important. So 90 minutes on the dot. Look at that. Thank you everyone for hanging out for as long as you have throughout this call. Again, this is our first training call. This one is live. I will be not teaching live for a handful of weeks because I will be teaching live in person somewhere else in the world. So I'll be with some other students, but the recordings from past training calls where I'm sitting here going through the handouts, same examples will be there for you to watch in your own time as we move through. The Q&A calls that are curated will always, again, be on Thursdays this week. The morning one is with Seth, my husband. So if you do have a question that maybe doesn't fall into some of the lab related stuff, or it's a curiosity, push that to our support team, and then he always curates the questions to answer in themes because a lot of the questions have similar themes. So it becomes kind of a bit of a lecture. It's like a long form podcast, really. Thanks, Jen, for being here in the chat and helping out. And thanks, Ari, for the back end. And thank you all for being here live. It's good to see some familiar faces and new faces. And to anyone listening or watching to the recording afterwards, thanks for coming in after and learning. So take a break, step away from the computer. Have a good rest of your day, everyone. And we'll see you when I'm back live later in April. All right, bye, everyone.